Chapter 15, The One Will and the One Life. The power aspect of the Solar Logos is behind the many processes by which all forms are built. This power is expressed as a continuous impulse, an insistent urge towards expansion, self-expression, growth. Primarily, it manifests through the life, inspiring every form. It is the core, or central heart within that life, a spark from the flame of that supreme will, which is immanent throughout all the material worlds. This power is the hidden nucleus which imparts to the indwelling life the force and the impulse to grow. The form is thus influenced from within by the ceaseless activity of the one will. This is the power which produces cell division, the force or energy which impels all forms to growth according to the archetype and imparts to them the urge to expansion and self-expression. Without this presence of the divine power within the cell, growth would not occur. At the close of a life cycle, this interior impulse is withdrawn. The life focus disappears from the cell, and the form ceases to grow. Ultimately, it disintegrates. The presence of the life focus, or spiritual nucleus, in every cell is the key to the problem of growth. This point, or concentration of solar power, also exists within the divine seed, the immortal germ, the monad, which one day shall be manifest as man. There, too, it serves to supply the continuous and resistless impulse towards unfoldment and the fulfillment of destiny. In atom, cell, and seed, solar power is restricted. In man, it begins to be released. In the genius, it is the source of the fire of inspiration. In spiritually awakened man, it is the power which calls him to the summit of the evolutionary mount, whereon perfection is attained. That which once was an outward manifestation is indrawn and united with the one will from which it came forth. The spark is reabsorbed into the flame. The supreme will is the very self of the Godhead, the interior essence of his being. It is also the spark within the spiritual self of every man, source of the fire of genius. Man is that spark, that power, and that fire. For he is the outward manifestation of the will of God. His physical birth, through a succession of parents, and his attainment of perfection through repeated lives on earth, these are expressions of the cyclic manifestation in time and space of that eternal and transcendent God, in whom time and space vanish to become the eternal now. All monads, points of solar power, are one in their essence and in their origin. They differ alone in the degree in which the one will is manifest within and through them. Such is the intimate relationship between the deity of a universe, the divine in man, the garments which they wear, and the worlds in which they live. This relationship, whilst interiorly innate, is outwardly made manifest as a flowing stream of life, linking the divine source and being with all its external expressions. This is the solar God, symbolically crucified upon the cross of matter and dismembered by enemies as his life pours forth through myriads of monads, each a miniature expression of divine life and power and consciousness. The one life is outpoured that the many lives may be sustained, may grow, and in their turn may learn the mystery of solar martyrdom, that eternal sacrifice by which all worlds are emanated and sustained. Chapter 16, The Builders of Forms. The builders of all growing forms compose one branch of the mighty tree, which is the angelic hierarchy, a tree of many branches, each branch with many stems, each stem with myriads of shoots and twigs, all with their appropriate leaves, flowers, and fruit. The angel husbandmen form one great branch. The angel singers of the glory of God, the angel ministers of the sacrificial solar fire, which pervades all worlds, the angels of earth, of water, and of air, each form a branch. All these have their appointed places as ministrants in the great mystery of everlasting transubstantiation, a sacramental offering on the altar of the temple of the solar worlds. Other branches serve in higher, subtler worlds, whilst all over all are the 12 great archangelic representatives of God himself, whose dwelling place is within the heart of the sun, even while he is also immanent within all worlds, all beings, and all things. The builders of form live, serve, and labor on the three lowest levels of density of which the system is composed. Their branch leaves the parent trunk at the mental level and stretches outward and downward until its leaves, flowers, and fruit, the various orders of nature spirits, reach and caress Mother Earth as they sway and rustle under the impulse of the divine breath. The angel builders are the offspring and embodiment of the divine mind, and therefore they manifest upon the plane of human intellect. The highest members of this branch of the angelic hierarchy are supramental beings who dwell in and embody the highest aspects of abstract and synthesizing thought. They are the natural denizens, the true inhabitants on the plane of principles and abstract intelligence. They form the natural phenomena of the world in which they live. They are that world, embodiments of divine intelligence, expressed in region of abstract thought. In the realm of the analytical intellect, a being, or rather an aggregate of beings, cannot readily be conceived of as forming a world. Yet, in the worlds beyond the concrete mind, such is indeed the case. The immortal self of man also dwells upon this lofty plane. He is, however, but a visitor in that realm, and his vehicle therein is not permanent. It was formed when the animal kingdom was left behind. It will be destroyed when the superhuman kingdom is entered, and the human kingdom is left behind. Thus, man is indeed a visitor in this region of the formless worlds. His eternal dwelling place is the realm of will. He abides forever in the very heart of the Supreme, in the center of that exhaustless source of life, which is the very self of God. Man, therefore, is but a traveler, a pilgrim through the seven solar worlds. In each world, a form is built. Those in the higher three are natural expressions of man's threefold divine nature. Those in the lower four, he does not build. And in that task, the building angels labor in his behalf. In its fulfillment, the angelic and the human hierarchies meet and are closely intermingled. Man inhabits the forms which the angels build, and thus incurs indebtedness For without their aid, his entry into and eventual mastery of the worlds of form could never be achieved. At every stage of his pilgrimage, and in each of the kingdoms of nature through which he passes, man meets and is served by the building orders of the angelic hosts. They also build all forms, including metals, jewels, and the world of verdure or greenness, the plant kingdom of nature, in which man dwells and grows, whilst ages of ages pass. The forms of reptile, of mammal, and of man are also built by angel hands, and these too serve man as vehicles for his long journeying through the kingdoms to which they belong. As perfected man, the monad will bid the building angels farewell. No longer will he need their joyous service, their untiring devotion to their portion of the labors of the Supreme. One day, that service will be repaid when man in his turn takes up the task of creation and assumes his station as a solar god to bring forth systems amid universes and cosmoi yet unborn. In that apotheosis, the orders of the building angels will have their share. They too will be lifted up and will partake of the exaltation of the monad, which, once man, now knows itself as a god. The presence of form builders in the formless worlds may seem a contradiction, yet all form arises from within these worlds, each having there its archetype. No form in any world is newly conceived or newly created. None can possibly arise which was not first conceived in an archetypal state by the one mind. These archetypes have their first existence in the formless levels of the mental world. To dwellers in the worlds below, angels and nature spirits, they do not appear as forms, but as flowing streams of energy emitted from a point. Each point is a center of force in the divine mind. It has its color and its sound, which govern the nature and the direction of the outstreaming energies. Certain of these outraying forces from the mind of God impinge upon the world of concrete thought, enter its atmosphere, and by their typical vibrations produce representations of archetypal forms in the lower mental world, the world of concrete thought. These forms, created by the mind of God, constitute the natural phenomena of certain levels of the world of concrete thought. Here dwell those hosts of the building angels who work with the material of the mental world. Their eyes, so to say, are fixed upon the archetypes, which serve as models and as molding power for the forms which they build. Each archetypal form is a living thing, an embodied force, which imparts its own typical vibration and its shape-producing influence to surrounding mental material. This imparted influence is exerted continuously and reaches the emotional, the etheric, and finally the dense physical worlds. Slowly, all forms are being molded to resemble more and more exactly those archetypes under whose influence they have been created, and by whose power their shapes have been determined. Thus, the divine mind labors from the dawn to the eve of the solar day, aided by the building angels, who are the embodiments of that mind. Their presence renders more effective the influences emanating from the archetypes. They absorb into themselves the typical vibrations of those archetypes until their own mental forms are wholly responsive to the influences of the models and emit similar vibrations. Throughout the whole vast realm of nature, these angel builders labor thus from age to age, ever quickening virginal material and radiating and extending the influences of the archetypes, to which they are naturally drawn by their own inner constitution. By these means they hasten and perfect the process of the projection of formative forces into the material worlds. Below the mental builders of form are those next in order of stature and development, who labor in the denser world of feeling and desire. In their turn, they embodied the vibrations of the archetypes, their rhythms and their forms. The more highly evolved angels, dwelling at the level at which emotion is naturally expressed, self-consciously labor in this way, for they have developed beyond the limitation of instinctive feeling, memory, and action. They have risen from the group consciousness of the nature spirits into self-conscious individuality, serving the divine mind with knowledge and by choice. Each of these higher angels holds within the range of its influence a number of subordinates whose awareness and actions are still instinctive. These are the nature spirit representatives of the group consciousness through which their seniors have evolved. Their younger brethren, who know and serve them with varying degrees of intelligence and choice according to their level of development. They include the nature spirits of the four elements of fire, air, water, and earth. known respectively as salamanders, that's fire, sylphs of air, undines of water, and gnomes of earth. Fairies, elves, and etheric infusoria, which collect and assimilate the physical material and deposit it within the etheric molds, also belong to this order of beings. These molds are expression of the archetypes. The solid structures are built into them and shaped accordingly, as far as the evolution of the dense material, the skill of the angelic and nature spirit builders, and the reacting forces associated with the life and consciousness within the forms permit. Such are the main principles which govern the labors of the Divine Mother of all worlds, the female aspect of the deity, and her countless hosts of builders throughout the worlds of form. Such is the basic science which from the beginning of time is practiced by the divine mind in the laboratory of nature. Under the operation of these laws and by these activities, the first living things appear within and upon the surface of the water and the solid earth. From the time when these two, water and earth, cover newborn globes. Chapter 17, Cosmic Life. Thus the Solar Lord pours forth his life into the many worlds which he has made. Thus he builds and ensouls new forms. Thus also he energizes the monads, or seeds of solar logoi, to be, ever finding new expressions for his life and power and consciousness. Thus he shares the labors of the logos of the universe, who is manifest in many suns, and immanent in their solar fields, ever expanding as new forms arise within those fields. In his turn, the Logos of the universe is empowered and inspired by the Cosmic Logos, whose life is immanent throughout the universal and solar worlds. New life is continually upwelling within the central cosmic heart from which universes and solar systems draw their sustenance. That life is one. It is the cosmic immanence, the unity behind and within the infinite diversity by which it is made manifest. That cosmic life wells up within the heart of every form in the universal and the solar fields. It is the ultimate, essential divinity, the spiritual essence, the innermost reality, which is eternally existent as the heart and core of every being. In man, in Solar Lord, in nature spirit, angel and archangel. In jewel, flower and animal, in all the diverse fruits of all the fields, that life is manifest. It is the ruling power, the controlling spiritual energy, the manifestation of a triune being whose nature is unknown, whose power is limitless, whose consciousness embraces all. The solar system is as a cell within the cosmic form. The sun is the nucleus within the cell. Through all cells and nuclei, the one life lives and moves and has its being. This vast hierarchy of intelligences and forms pulses and vibrates as that life flows through. Picture then the cosmic whole. Observe the rhythmic breathing of the cosmic Lord, and in the rising and falling of his breast, perceive the expression in cosmic time and space of that eternal motion from which cosmos spring. That motion is impressed upon the outward flowing life, which is thus made ever active and is ceaselessly at work. The cosmos is not static. It changes continually, each change providing a freer outflow for the one life. Each pulsing movement brings to birth new forms, each form being a new and more beautiful embodiment and expression of the cosmic Lord. Thus, throughout the cosmic fields, eternal motion is established, and from motion is made manifest the principle of growth. The life ever expands and unfolds. The form grows ever more perfect in its power to express that life. All things in the cosmic fields are growing, even solar logoi and universal lords. The purpose of each new form and of every change in every form is to provide a wider field of self-expression for the one life, a more beautiful manifestation of the one intelligence, and a more perfect responsiveness to the one will. Chapter 18, The Work of the Builders. The angelic builders, dwelling in the formless levels of the divine mind, inspired with divine intelligence, liberate the threefold stream of cosmic, universal, and solar life into the lower worlds of form through their subordinates who dwell therein. These too become inspired by that life, and their activities are ordered by that divine intelligence. From this life and intelligence, they draw the power which inspires them to those creative labors which they perform through the long ages of solar life. They need no external guide, for life wells up within them, and perfect intelligence orders all their work. Under the impulse of the divine will, the archetypes project their power into the lower worlds of form. The material of those worlds responds but slowly in the earlier stages of the solar system. The quality of inertia predominates within that dense material, and even mental forms appear but slowly as that inertia resists the descending archetypal power. The angel builders in the mental worlds absorb the dull material into their radiant forms. Their bodies are ensouled to play upon and vivify the matter of their world. As its inertia is decreased, the builders receive within themselves the vibratory power of the archetypes. Intensify and concentrate its energy, and then direct it upon the material which they have absorbed. In this task, they call forth the highest powers of will and thought. They affirm their conscious union with the indwelling life and their submission to the divine intelligence, thereby drawing in fullest measure on those interior powers in order that their labors may be performed with the greatest possible efficiency. Above them, in the formless worlds of spiritual intelligence, their rulers also labor to project the archetypal forms and, with their brethren, to bridge the gulf between the form and the formless worlds. By their aid, the indwelling life and energy influence more powerfully the material in which the solar logos, the heavenly artist, the supreme modeler, labors to produce the manifested solar worlds. Thus, he and his angel builders labor without respite until slowly inertia gives place to responsiveness, and the solar rhythm is impressed upon the lower worlds. At last, the densest worlds appear. In earth, in air, in water, and in fire, the physical builders of the Logos take up their labors under the impulse of his will. Thus, from heaven to earth, from spirit to matter, from life to form, the bridge is built by the labors of the angelic hosts. The feminine aspect of deity broods over all this vast activity. She also imparts her nature to the outward flowing life, in order that both the builders and the material in which they build may be rendered increasingly responsive to the creative power of the divine will and the molding influence of the divine intelligence. Thus, she, the feminine aspect of deity, exists within all material, dwells within all forms, yet broods upon them maternally as the heavenly mother of all worlds. From her station in the spiritual sun, she is at one with the solar life, and through that life is one with every form. Under the influence of these many agents of the hidden mind, and obeying the creative molding power of its archetype, the first physical atom, molecule, and cell appear. The first cell is a microcosm, and in its turn sends forth its typical vibrations, thereby surrounding itself with the conditions necessary for its further growth. Thus also, the sun was formed within the ocean of universal space. The physical agents of the divine mind, the nature spirits, in their appropriate orders, answer to that vibratory call. Enter the microcosmic ring pass not, the membrane enclosing a cell, and take up their labors, as did their prototypes, the angel builders of the solar worlds, when first those worlds were formed. In the organic kingdoms of nature, the first call to labor received by the nature spirit issues from the etheric counterpart of the nucleus, which is the creative center of the cell. As yet, but the etheric projection of the archetype. Through that nucleus pass the power, the intelligence, and the feminine aspect of deity, which together impart the special note, calling the etheric builders to their task of shaping the etheric mold. The power energizes them, and for a time they lose their slight sense of individuality and become minute but living embodiments of that vibratory power. Inspired by the one will, ordered by the one mind, they labor to produce in dense material a copy of the archetypal ethereal form. The flowing forces comprising that form and the electric and magnetic energies, which are its external manifestations, themselves also attract appropriate material towards the growing form. The foundations of the material worlds are the forces flowing from the archetypes and the etheric molds. Inspired and vitalized by these outward flowing forces, the nature spirits absorb etheric material, which, in contact with their life, is impressed both with their individual vibration and that of the archetypal power which now is flowing through them. Thus, specialized and somewhat densified, this etheric material is then deposited by the nature spirits into its appropriate position within the molds, and gradually forms are built at the densest etheric and later physical levels. Meanwhile, under the impulse and pressure of the descending will of God, the principle of compression is applied from within the etheric form. Atoms are combined into molecules. Molecules combine to form dense physical material. Gradually, physical cells with their energy centers, nuclei, protoplasm, and walls are produced. The down-flowing creative forces find in dense physical substance an impassable resistance, a barrier from which they rebound to their source in the spiritual sun, the solar logos. The principle of outward flowing and returning power is thus established in all living cells. The divine will, now active in nuclei and cells, exerts a ceaseless pressure under which all organic forms must continually expand. The cell is now a living being, a unit. It is form and consciousness, substance and life, and vehicle for divine intelligence. A portion of that intelligence is manifest within the primitive cell form, where it is confined and bedulled, until represented only by a dim, instinctive urge to reproduce. Expansion, reproduction, and the active feminine principle, these three are inherent in every cell. I repeat that. Expansion, reproduction, and the active feminine principle, these three are inherent in every cell. Under their influence, the command of the divine will to expand and grow is obeyed. The cell expands, divides, and is reproduced. A new nucleus appears, formed by the same processes as was the first. A call is again sent out to the building hosts, and a second cell appears. The models of all forms into which the aggregated cells will be molded exist within the archetypal worlds. An order of angelic builders and servants is associated with each archetype, and its projection into the material worlds is carried out by them. As the cells thus multiply, they are in their turn used as the basis of new forms, are built into their etheric molds by the appropriate order of nature spirits. In this way, all forms throughout every kingdom of nature are constructed, and the archetypes existent within the formless levels of the divine mind are projected and made manifest in the worlds of form. Chapter 19, Transition from Mineral to Plant. All monads find successive embodiments in each of the kingdoms of nature: mineral, plant, animal, human, and beyond. Each such embodiment at first but imperfectly reflects the innate qualities of the monadic seed. As the ages pass, the archetypal design expressive of those qualities is more perfectly represented. And eventually the outer form attains a measure of perfection. The seed then sprouts into a new kingdom of nature, where the life and consciousness within finds greater freedom and more perfect expression of the finer attributes of the seed. Again, the long, slow ages pass, in which the life in the new kingdom of nature unfolds through a succession of slowly perfecting vehicles. The deepest state of density in which the life is imprisoned is the metal and the jewel. There, through the monadic and the seed, which has been spiritually fertilized and is unfolding from within, the external vehicle is rigid and yielding. The flowing life within thus meets with the extreme of resistance, against which it exerts an outward pressure to the fullest limits of its power. In that exertion, strength is attained. From that resistance, stability is evolved. The dense material of which the vehicle is built receives continually the impulses of the expanding life within, and is thereby made responsive to the will of God, who is himself embodied in the material of which his solar system has been built. His is the pressure that is applied through the seeds. His the life which is ever expanding in them, as he seeks a more perfect and complete expression of his will throughout all worlds. Thus, he is self-imprisoned. Thus does he build his prison walls. Thus is he buried, that the seeds may grow. The monads at last break free from their mineral imprisonment, and then are clothed with the vehicle which has been prepared for them in the vegetable world. As the plant seed puts forth a shoot, and the shoot develops leaves, so the monads, as spiritual seeds, unfold their innate powers. The consciousness within the plant achieves liberation. The resistance to the life force is diminished, and a great expansion occurs. The life within the monad has at last begun the long journey from imprisonment to freedom, from immanence to transcendence. The builders of the vegetable forms now tend and serve the growing plant, providing it with vehicles of ever-growing beauty and responsiveness. In the ethereal worlds, the fairy and the elf, the sylph and the undine now offer their vivid life force to quicken the evolution of the consciousness and to perfect the form. A single monad finds many vehicles, evolves through many vegetable forms, from the lowest to the highest, from moss and grass to flowing plant, and thence to tree, ever achieving greater freedom and wider expression of its unfolding powers. The dual manifestation of the Supreme, formative and evolutionary, proceeds with increasing variation as new vehicles are ensouled. His life is manifest through nucleus and cell, through stem, branch, flower, and fruit, in all the vegetable world. His life is also manifest with increasing consciousness, with growing intelligence, and slowly appearing knowledge of self-existence in the monads, which use these forms as vehicles. The life which was imprisoned in the darkness of the earth now lives amid the soft breezes of the air, feels the light and warmth of the sun, which now plays upon the growing seeds from without. The rays of the sun bear his quickening influence, both to the vehicles and to the monadic life within them. Thus, the solar logos pours forth his life upon his worlds in yet another form, the form of light. Chapter 20, Light. As the ages pass, the solar logos becomes established in his many worlds, pours forth his life into spiritual seeds and physical cells, and pervades the material of which those cells are built. He is also established within the sun, building there in miniature a replica of all his worlds. Each globe is represented. Every kingdom of nature has its solar expression, as slowly the Logos achieves his incarnation in the sun. There established, filled with most perfect and all-embracing love, he pours forth his life and light in boundless beneficence. Sunlight is an expression of his love. By light, he fills his system with his power. This power beats upon his many globes, quickening the life established there.